Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on genetic roulette when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something's wrong with them, because they've been banned from our public schools, they're banned from our public institutions, and now they've been banned from our national consciousness. So instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we now see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto to our children in our public schools, in our public institutions. We Americans have made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion? That's right. Your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. And that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. Our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. So it's pretty obvious that they did not understand the separation of church and state. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effect. Now, whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, natural law, karma, or something else, it all works automatically, just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, informative, entertaining, and free. You can call right now to order one. The number is 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine when you get there. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book. It's called Genetic Roulette. It's published by, I don't know who the publisher is, I guess I got to look that up. The author's name is Jeffrey Smith. I don't know that we need to get involved in the publisher and the Library of Congress catalog number. It was sent to me by BraveNewBookstore.com. They wanted me to research to review it. So I read the book and I said, hey, this is dynamite. This guy has got something intelligent to say, and I ought to review the book. So I went ahead and did it. So you can get a copy from BraveNewBookstore.com. And remember, you're looking for Genetic Roulette, Jeffrey Smith. Now, if you don't want to waste that much time and you live in a big city and you got Barnes & Noble down the street, just walk into Barnes & Noble. It was published in 2007, brand new book. And just walk in. Jeffrey Smith's the author, Genetic Roulette. He put out another book. It was called Seeds of Deception. That was another dynamite book. Now, I reviewed Seeds of Deception. It was 3, 4, 5 years ago. This is an update. In Seeds of Deception, he said, why these genetically modified organisms might cause disease. They might cause death. We don't know. That was the drift of his book 5 years ago. He said, hell, we're all becoming guinea pigs. We don't know what the hell the results of this is going to be. And so I reported that to you then. I said, well, I think he's right. I don't want to get involved in some experiment. I don't want to be a guinea pig for Monsanto. Let them pay for their own experimentation. Now he comes back with a book and says, okay, well, what we thought might happen 5 years ago has happened, past tense, and now we can report to you. Now we have some scientific evidence. Now we've got some laboratory studies. Now we've got animal models. Now we've got dead bodies piled up. That's what I reported to you last time. L-tryptophan killed 100 people, crippled up 5 or 10,000 more. Put one company out of business. Now, the L-tryptophan wasn't the problem. It was the genetic modification in the manufacturing process. Corn isn't the problem. It's the genetic modification in the growing of the corn. The soybeans aren't the problem. It's the GM soy. That's what the problem is. Now, to get a little more technical, the growing GM crops using tissue culture can create hundreds of thousands of DNA mutations. And the process of growing plant cells into GM plants may create hundreds or thousands of mutations throughout the genome. Now, while a change in a single base pair may have serious consequences, widespread changes in the genome can have multiple interacting effects. And most scientists working in the field are unaware of the extent of these mutations, and no studies have examined genome-wide changes in commercialized GM plants. Now, up until now, all technologies were controllable. Electricity, even nuclear power, can be turned on and off. But GM is the first irreversible technology in human history. Let me read that again. Genetic modification is the first irreversible technology. There's no turning back. Once you turn this genie loose, he's gone. Now, when a GMO is released, it's out of our control. We have no means to call it back. We can insert a transgene, but we cannot take the released transgene out. Now, since GMOs are self-replicating, releasing them might have dire consequences. Dire consequences for human and animal health, and for the environment, and can even change evolution. That so says Professor Susan Bardox, biochemist and nutritionist. Well, she's not just whistling Dixie through a straw hat. That's what bothers me. You know, as a farmer, I sit over here. My neighbors, if they were to plant GM corn over here, it's going to affect mine because, you know, bees are traveling around. They don't just stop at my fence line, you know. Monarch butterflies, for instance, have been killed by this genetic modification of corn. You know, we spend billions of dollars trying to save the spotted owl, and then we come out here and kill all of the monarch butterflies. What in the hell kind of sense does that make? I don't know, you know, monarch butterflies, I don't know what they do or how good or how bad they are, but I don't think we ought to eradicate monarch butterflies. For the benefit of Monsanto or genetic modification or farmers over here, once you turn this genie loose, it's gone, and it's already been done. That's why I reported to you that the Messiah said that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Now, he was talking about the Great Tribulation. Listen to this in context. He said, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. But pray that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. What does genetic modification have to do with the Great Tribulation? Well, if you got a pen and paper out there, let me give you a couple of pointers here. There are several chapters in the Bible that give us the penal clause. They tell us, well, if you do X, Y, Z, you can expect a result called A, B, C. If you wring your nose, you can expect to get blood. If you take arsenic, you can expect to die. If you smoke cigarettes, you can expect to get cancer. I mean, there's just certain cause and effect relationships that go on in the real world out here. We don't like the consequences. We like to smoke. We don't want to get cancer. And so the bright spot is a lot of people smoke and they don't get cancer. And so then that gives us our edge. See, then we can say, well, you know, not everybody that smokes gets cancer. Yeah, but more people that smoke get cancer than people that don't smoke. And so here in the Bible, there are several chapters that give us a cause and effect relationship. Here's what that cause and effect relationship is. You know, our Creator says, you practice my law and you'll live to be an old man and you'll be happy and contented and healthy and everything goes fine. Now, if you don't practice my laws, then you're going to be real miserable, real sad, have a short lifespan, and be real sick for a long time. So, you know, if you want to eat a lot of fat, blood, and unclean meat, get after it. But you can expect heart attack, breast cancer, stroke, and Parkinson's disease. And so in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, those are the two key chapters that deal with the penal clause to the contract. We have a contract that was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai. Moses, remember that guy? Carlton Heston, you know, old Moses and the Ten Commandments. Well, old Moses went up on the mountain, talked to our Creator. We call him God, and came down off the mountain. Said, "Okay, here's what the boss tells us. He says, do this, do that, do something else. Everything's going to be fine. If you don't do this, that, and another thing, he said, if I don't kill you, you'll die from some other disease. And one of the laws that he gave us, he said, don't mingle your seed." You know, put another way, don't hybridize your seed. Don't genetically modify your seed. And so we went out and we hybridized it. Now we got to real technology. Now we can genetically modify it. We can actually insert genes. We can play God. We can create new species of plants. Now over in Genesis chapter 11, this technology question came up at the Tower of Babel. And God said, let us go down and take a look at what these guys are doing. There's more than one God. There's two. God the Father, and then there's the Son. We call him Jesus. And said, let us go down and take a look at it. Us, you and me, both of us. They came down, they took a look, and they said, oh my God, look what these people are doing now. He said, nothing will be restrained from them. That's a pretty powerful statement. You know, oh my God, and now nothing will be restrained from them. I reported to you the other day on Dead Men's Secrets that there are 25 or 29 nuclear explosion sites around the world that we've discovered so far. There's probably more than that, but we've discovered 29 of them. And that happened after the flood. 29 nuclear explosions after the flood, but before 1945. We know that because of the effect of the 1945 Alamogordo explosion. It creates glass. It melts the elements and turns it into glass. We found 29 of those. It's only done by nuclear explosions. All right, now getting back here then to the subject matter at hand, nothing will be restrained from us. And as a consequence of that, we're facing what the Messiah said, and except those days should be shortened, no flesh will be saved alive. We have opened Pandora's box. We have let the genie out of the jar. And Jeffrey Smith is reporting on it. And in this section, growing GM crops using tissue culture can create hundreds of thousands of DNA mutations. And then once they're out there, You can't call them back. Now, gene insertion creates genome-wide changes in gene expression. And one study using a microarray gene chip found that 5% of the host's genes changed their levels of expression after a single gene was inserted. So, you know, here comes our bright young kid, you know, from New York, the Bronx kid. And he takes a job now after college as a biologist. Now he graduates, he gets his degree in biology. Now he goes to work for Monsanto, and he's out here, and he finds a gene, and he inserts this one gene, this flounder gene, into the Flavor Saver tomato. And God, he's just happy as a clam at high tide. And then Monsanto goes out and gets a patent, and they go out and they market this thing. Once it gets out here into the environment, it mutates. It changes. Well, are the changes going to be beneficial or are they going to be harmful? We don't know. We haven't got a clue. You know, this thing of trying to play God, you know, before you actually become God and you're out here playing God, you know, you could get yourself into a lot of trouble. Now, the Creator spent a lot of time, and he put genes in, a very complex RNA and DNA and genes and enzymes. He created food, the kind of fuel that we need to nourish our bodies and give us the nutrients that we need. And then he told us what to eat and what not to eat. Gave us a little advice and said, hey, don't eat that. That'll give you a heart attack. Don't smoke that. That'll give you cancer. Eat this over here. That's got lots of nutrition. My mommy and daddy used to do that. They'd say, eat all of your broccoli, little Georgie. It's good for you. Frankly, I preferred Hershey candy bars, but my daddy thought that broccoli was better than Hershey candy bars. I don't know where he got that, but I can tell you as a kid 5 years old, you know, any five-year-old kid can tell you which is the better tasting product, Hershey candy bar or broccoli. You know, you don't have to go to college to figure that out. But anyway, you know, my daddy insisted that I eat more broccoli and less Hershey's. And I guess it's because he thought that he knew better what was nutritious for my little young body growing up. And I ate more broccoli, and I grew up to be a great big strong kid, you know. I'm 6 foot and weigh 200 pounds, and hell, I'm just healthy as a horse. And I don't attribute that to Hershey's. No, I attribute that to the broccoli and raw milk. But, you know, along comes God, and he says, hey, eat this and eat that. And then, you know, we adults, we sit there and say, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. Not a student here one day, he told me that. He said, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. He was a farmer from Amarillo, Texas. And old Roy, I call him old Roy, I kind of forgot his name now. But anyway, a couple of years later, his wife called up and said, well, old Roy died, had a heart attack and died. He's 47. I always remember old Roy. And he's the guy who told me, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. My God, nobody did. I pointed out to him, I said, God told you pig wasn't good for you. And he's a pig-eating Christian, you know, so he's going to eat pig. So he did. Well, same thing's going on now with these GM-modified foods, you know. Nobody's going to tell us what to eat, and so we're going to go out here and we're going to GM-splice and put flounder into the tomato plants and make them frost-resistant and so on down the line. But unbeknownst to us, these genes, you know, express themselves in other plants. In other words, that tomato plant, once it gets out into the wild, you know, it's going to have genes and splicings and reproduction. And see what happens. The bees come over and they pollinate this plant. They take the pollen from that one, they take it over to another one. Take the pollen from that one. Now you've got these genetic modified pollens moving around with these insects. And I can't keep the GM pollen on your side of the fence away from my open pollinated seed on my side of the fence. And so your GM pollen comes over here and crossbreeds with my corn. And then my corn gets, you know, with somebody else's corn and so on down the line. And it all becomes contaminated. The contamination process has already been released into the environment. It's a done deal. I just look over here at Matthew 24:22 and I say, uh-oh. Now, fortunately for all of us, the Messiah says he is going to intervene on our behalf when it gets right down to where it has to be intervened in order to save us from ourselves. He's going to do it. That's the good news. Bad news is he ain't going to do it until the last minute, and a lot of people are going to die in the process. In the last program, I reported that 100 people we know of, we don't know how many more than that, but we can identify 100 people that died from the L-tryptophan genetic process back in the 80s. And then we didn't learn from that, so we said, well, we're going to just keep right on going. And, you know, George Bush, the president, and all the top officials in the Republican and Democratic parties, you know, Bill Clinton was right in there. He was promoting GM. So don't think that this is a Republican and this is the corporations now. It's the Democrats also. The political establishment. They're pushing what the corporate establishment wants. And the corporate establishment wants genetically modified products so that they can sell them to more and more farmers and make more and more products and make more and more profit, make more and more money. And we can't blame them, and I'm not railing against them. I'm just reporting to you that that's the way the game is being played. And these people all working together are killing us. And God himself says, yep, that's exactly right. And unless I jump in here and save your heinies from yourselves, you know, you're going to kill yourselves. And you people are pretty damn smart. Nothing's going to be restrained from you. And I've mentioned this before. I said, just because we can do it, does that mean that we should do it? I mean, there's a lot of things that I could do, you know. And I went out and did them. Now, that doesn't mean I should have done them, but I got away with it. But, you know, sometimes you don't get away with it. So Jeffrey Smith now, in this section of the book, talking about the gene insertion problem, he says the promoter may accidentally switch on harmful genes, and the promoter might create genetic instability and mutations, and genetic engineering activities, mobile DNA called transposons, which generate mutations. And novel RNA may be harmful to humans and their offspring. And Roundup Ready soybeans produce unintentional RNA variations. Huh. Are you really sure that we want these RNA variations? What do these RNA variations do? Has anybody experimented and found out? The answer is no. We haven't got a clue. We're out here experimenting. You know, it would be best, wouldn't it, to keep the experiment limited and in the laboratory? There was a movie one time, it was called The Andromeda Strain. And in this movie, there was this flying saucer came in from outer space, see? And the space alien had this Andromeda Strain. It had this deadly disease pathogen. And so, you know, the good guys, the scientists, they got this guy and they took it into this laboratory. And they isolated it. And they took a look at it, and God, it was deadly. I mean, if you got this thing, you're just dead. Dead on arrival. D-E-D. So they got this thing locked up in here, see? And they said, oh my God, if this thing escapes from this laboratory, it will destroy the world. You know how these movies go, you know, these disaster movies, you know. Well, you know, as the plot thickens over here, it gets out of the vial and it gets into the room, and then it gets out of the room and into the laboratory, and then pretty soon they get to the point, well, the only solution to save mankind is to blow this thing up, destroy the Andromeda Strain and all of us with it. And you know, kids, that's about where we're at here with this GM. The GM is out. It's outside the laboratory. It's out in the environment. Let me tell you a little story here. There's a years and years ago, you know, there was a push on to aquaculture. And so they started with catfish in ponds. And so down in the south, they started growing catfish in ponds and selling catfish. And God, it just worked out real good. And so somebody said, well, if it's good for catfish, well, maybe we could grow trout that way. And so they started putting in trout ponds, you know, and so they use what's called aquaculture, which is a takeoff on agriculture. And they did this aquaculture thing with trout. And so down at Twin Falls, for instance, there's several big trout farms down there, and they produce trout, you know, domestic trout. They're not catching them, you know, out in the lake or out in the stream, but they're growing them. They raise them. They feed them like pigs in a pigsty. And so that worked out pretty good. So somebody said, well, could we do that with salmon? Well, the salmon, you know, they don't grow in freshwater. They got to have some salt water. And so they went up to Puget Sound, you know, up there around Seattle. And they put some big nets out there, and they started these trout. They grow into salmon, and the salmon, you know, go out in the ocean, and they come back. And then they take they catch the salmon, ordinarily wild salmon, they catch them. And so now they've got these tame salmon, we'll call them tame, you know, domesticated salmon, fish trap salmon, that they're growing in these traps, fish traps or ponds. But they're actually, these fish traps are now out in the salt water, see. I mean, they're not locked in like on a farm down in Georgia where they've got a pond and the catfish can't escape and interbreed with the wild catfish. These pond-raised catfish are pond-raised catfish, and the pond-raised trout are the pond-raised trout. They don't mix with the wild population. But now, in order to raise salmon, they had to have the fish pond out in the ocean or out in the bay, where the wild salmon would be swimming right by outside the net. Well, inevitably, some of these tame salmon are going to get out into the wild salmon population, and then they're going to interbreed with them, aren't they? Well, you know, 30 years ago when they first started this, they didn't think there was any problem. Now, over the years, here's what they've discovered. The wild salmon, they multiply by putting out tens of thousands of eggs. And tens of thousands of those eggs are all eaten by predators, but a few of them survive. And unlike an eagle, which only lays one egg and produces one offspring every year, the salmon produce millions of offspring, and millions of them die, but a few thousand of them survive. And that's the way they propagate the species forever. You know, as evolutionists would say, well, it evolved that way. Well, I happen to think that God created it that way, and that's the way it works. Now, here's what happens. The tame salmon, they only produce about half as many offspring. About 25 to 50% as many. So they're about 50 to 75% short. In other words, they produce so few offspring that out in the wild, they would die out. They're going to become extinct. So, if the tame salmon ever get out and loose with the wild salmon, they'll interbreed, and they'll grow geometrically, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. And sure enough, they did. And now, they're finding that the wild salmon numbers are declining. They're declining because the tame salmon have interbred with them, and because they don't produce as many offspring, then there's not as many of them that do survive. And as a result of that, the estimate is in the next 20 to 50 years, there will be no wild salmon left anywhere on planet Earth. Now mull that over. And now nothing will be restrained from them. And except those days be shortened, there'll no flesh be saved alive. Now, I guess as far as aquaculture and scientists and the kids that go to college and the CEOs at Monsanto are concerned, they really don't care. But I don't think they understand the long-range consequences of their actions. that the young kid who goes to college and becomes a biologist doesn't grasp, can't connect the dots, can't put together the long-range story as to what his invention of splicing this flounder gene with the tomato is going to do over the next 20 to 50 years. We haven't kept it in the laboratory to experiment with it to find out whether we're dealing with the Andromeda strain or we're dealing with a benign improvement. And in the case of the salmon in the world will all become extinct because that's the numbers game. And that's what God warned us about. And the GM problem is going to do the same thing. We are going to have famine because we are causing it ourselves. And now nothing will be restrained from us. We're pretty smart. But, you know, we're trying to play God here, and we haven't quite got the God quality or the God standard down pat yet. We're not quite to that level. We've got power over here, and we're exercising that power. We went out and created nuclear weapons. But we're really not able to control or to handle those nuclear weapons. Do you feel real good about nuclear weapons being in the hands of a bunch of lunatics in Pakistan? I know you Pakistanis are all going to be offended now because I called you lunatics. Excuse me. But people who tie explosives onto themselves and then get into cars and drive around blowing up women and children, I think are lunatics. And boy, there's a bunch of them all over the Muslim world. Not to say that all Muslims are lunatics, but boy, you got more than your share, boys and girls. More than your shares. Hey, we got a bunch of lunatics working over here in the United States, and we call them scientists. Meanwhile, back on the farm, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, we'd like to invite you to go to our webpage at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools total. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk. For more information, go to our homeschooling page. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion and health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it all 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. In the Law Hour, an editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors and publications endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, or the sponsors, or the management or staff of this network, or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the book, Genetic Roulette. I just mentioned to you that we have opened Pandora's box. Not everything that we have invented in the history of mankind has necessarily been good for us. We invented bows and arrows and crossbows, and we've invented guns and rapidly firing guns, machine guns. I mean, we've got airplanes, we've got fighter bombers. We have invented all kinds of crazy things to kill people with. If there's one thing that human beings are good at, it's killing their fellow human beings. We have a law that says you shall do no murder. It's against the law to kill people. God himself, our creator, told us not to do that. But then, what does he know? Now we've come up with a process here called genetic modification in which we can take genes out of one plant or out of an animal and put them in another plant or in another animal. We can now clone animals. And we're working on a new wave of technology. We want to be able to make stem cells. We want to be able to recreate whole organs in our bodies. Well, boys and girls, we're really not able to handle milk thistles and genes down here at the lowest level. You know, we've got L-tryptophan that killed 100 people. We found that this genetic modification over here is more complex than we originally thought it was. And it's out of control, and we were unable to control it to start with. And that's why I brought it to your attention. I said, you know, just because we can do it doesn't mean that we should do it. But we went ahead and did it anyway, and now it's loose. The tame salmon are loose in the wild population, and there's going to be a consequence that comes from that. And the consequence is going to be irreversible. You're not ever going to change that wild salmon, tame salmon equation. And I would contend that we shouldn't have done it to start with. You know, we were doing all right with the wild salmon. Yeah, we go out and catch them. Yeah, there's some profits to be made by raising them here in a pen, but maybe it's not the best idea in the world. And now, come to find out, not only wasn't it the best idea, if you're going to have salmon in the years to come, it'll have to be grown in those pens because the wild salmon population has now been infected by the tame salmon. And the tame salmon don't reproduce with the same numbers of offspring that the wild salmon do. And without those huge numbers, then they're going to die out. And so slowly but surely, in rivers all over, they're dying out. And then, of course, a lot of people are sitting there saying, well, we just don't understand why. We just can't put the lines to the dots. We just can't connect them. So we need to spend more money and hire more biologists, you know. It looks like to me that the money and the biologists were our problem, not the solution. It's kind of like education, you know. We spend more money than anybody else in the world and turn out the dumbest kids in the world. It hasn't dawned on us yet that the more money you spend, the dumber the kids become. Nobody wants to admit that that's true, but that's what the numbers tell us. So if you want to spend twice as much money on education, you should be able to cut the educational achievement in half. You want dumber kids, spend twice as much money. Alright, so GM crops have altered the levels of nutrients and toxins. Numerous studies on GMOs reveal unintended changes in nutrients, toxins, allergens, and small molecule products of metabolism. These demonstrate the risks associated with unintended changes that occur due to genetic engineering. And safety assessments are not adequate to guard against potential health risks associated with these changes. So right now we're taking the GM corn and we take it in and we look at it and we say, oh my God, it's got less copper, less iron, less manganese, and less protein than the open pollinated varieties. That's what we discovered when we hybridized our corn. We found that it has less nutrients than the open pollinated. And so now we're doing genetic engineering when we find that this has less nutrients than the hybridized. Hey, kids, I think we're going in the wrong direction. Now, one thing is true. We're producing more bins and bushels of this foodless food. And that's why I told you, I think it was last time or time before, I said, listen, farmers get paid four times more for producing foodless food than they do good, nutritious food. Farmers are going to produce what they get paid for. The system calls for and rewards farmers for producing bad food. And in fact, they get paid twice as much for producing four times as much bad food. And as long as that policy is in place, that's what you're going to get. Now, that's not what we want. That's not what's good for us, but that's what we're buying. That's what we're paying for. Jeffrey Smith comes along and says, let me explain that to you. The book's $27.95. It's well worth the $27.95. Hell, if it was $127.95, it'd be well worth it. And that's because the warning that we get, the information that we get, gives you and I the edge so that we can avoid it. Well, I say that's worth a bundle. Now let me give you some more details here on this. GM crops have altered the levels of nutrients and toxins. You get more poison and less protein. Previous pages in this section describe how the GM transformation, the process, may alter the composition of GM crops. Unfortunately, biotech companies avoid using modern techniques to identify and quantify many known nutrients, antioxidants, mutagens, carcinogens, and toxins in plants. Instead, they typically measure only a few items at a gross compositional level, for example, total protein and total carbohydrates, rather than specific components such as what proteins and what carbohydrates. Furthermore, studies are designed to make it difficult to identify significant differences. All right, now what they're telling us here is the GM companies over there are saying, in effect, there's no difference between our GM corn and the regular corn. That's what their sales pitch is. There's no difference. That's why they're telling us we don't need any labels. Corn is corn is corn. Milk is milk is milk. All right. So that's their story. Now, when we take this stuff into the laboratory, we find out that it has less protein, less nutrients, less micronutrients. Do you remember this guy, Adolf Steinbrun? Remember that story? And let me flip back here and see if I can find good old Adolf here. Adolf Steinbrun. I think it's in... Oh, shucks. It's either here or it's in 100,000. Yeah. Adolf Steinbrun of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter in perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. When compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, Steinbrun's open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein. That's 75% more crude protein. I'll get it out. 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result has also been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, going back here to Leviticus 19:19, you shall not mix your seed. You shall not sow your field with mingled seed. Don't hybridize your seed. And when we do, we find out that when compared to open pollinated seed, that's the God-created seed, compared to the man-created seed, the hybrids, that it contains more nutrients, which is the purpose for food. When God created food, He created it for the purposes of refueling your body. You know, so in gasoline, we have gasoline with 87 octane. The octane is the heat that's in the gasoline. It's the stuff that we need. And if the octane wasn't important, then why not buy gasoline with 22 octane instead of 87? When we fly airplanes, we want 130 octane gasoline. And, well, if it's not important, then why don't we just put 87 octane gasoline into our airplanes? And that's because we want more bang for the buck. We want hotter gas. We want better burning fuel. And so we have to have the nutrients in the fuel. Well, that's what corn is all about. Corn has protein. And I reported to you, I said, gee, I had a pig farmer come down here to school, had 6% protein in the corn, and the pigs died. They got the protein content up to 8 and 10%, and the pigs lived and thrived. All right. Now, when you eat foods, boys and girls, that have low protein and low nutrients, low minerals, low vitamin content, then you get sick. You get cancer, muscular dystrophy, Parkinson's disease, and so on. You know, I've reported this a time or two. You know, you take vitamin C out of your diet and you'll get scurvy. Put vitamin C back into your diet and the scurvy will go away. So you don't have to be real smart to figure out that food that we eat is the fuel that we burn, and it has to have an octane rating, vitamins and minerals. Now, we take these GM foods in, and they have less nutrients than the hybridized seed, which has less nutrients than the open pollinated seed, which was created by God at the creation of the world. So we're going in the wrong direction. Now, you know, if the guys could come in here and say, well, this GM food is better than the hybrid food, it contains, you know, what we want to read is, you know, this GM food contains 875% more copper, 75% more crude protein. It contains 345% more iron. But it doesn't. It contains 75% less crude protein, 875% less copper, 345% less iron. Oh my God, why in the hell would anybody want to buy it? Well, no wonder these corporations don't want to report on it. They don't want you to know. I don't blame them. I wouldn't want you to know that either. Now there's more problems with it. The metabolites, that's changed metabolites. These metabolites are small molecules that are the intermediate and end products of metabolism. And they can be beneficial or they can be harmful. They can be nutrients or they can be toxins. They can be good food or they can be poisons. In 4 lines of potatoes engineered to alter sugar metabolism, scientists measured the presence of 88 metabolites. Most levels had been changed, and 9 of the 88 were only present in the GM potatoes. They were not contained in the controls. Well, David Schubert writes, given the enormous pool of plant metabolites, the observation that 10% of those assayed are new in one set of transfections, that's GM transformation events, strongly suggests that undesirable or harmful metabolites may be produced and accumulate. All right, so we take it in here and say, oh my God, this stuff produces more toxins and poisons than the other foods do. Well, again, we're going in the wrong direction. We want less and less poisons, not more and more. Now, in most cases, changed metabolites in GM crops are not measured. Gee, I wonder why. Well, by knowing which major compound has been altered, sometimes one can infer changes in the intermediate products. For example, the stems of BT corn varieties, such as the MON 810 and the BT11, as well as Roundup Ready soybeans, have markedly released or increased levels of lignin by 20%. It's a woody, non-digestible compound. Lignin is produced through a complex series of steps, which also create other important plant constituents. Since lignin has increased, the amount of the other related compounds may have changed. That's according to David Schubert. Components of this same biochemical pathway also produce both flavonoids and isoflavonoids that have a high nutritional value. The rotenone, a plant-produced insecticide that may cause Parkinson's disease. No tests have been done to evaluate changes in these other components. In fact, even the increased lignin content in corn was not discovered until the varieties had been on the market for 5 years. The higher lignin in soybeans was only identified after the stems of plants inexplicably split in the heat at the height of the growing season. Right, so not only are you farmers taking it in the shorts because the plants are weaker and they're not as, you know, not as hardy, but then after the plant has grown and it's harvested, 5 years later, somebody wakes up and says, oh my God, this thing's got 20% more of this bad toxin in it than we thought or that we knew about. Well, shouldn't we have experimented with that first and found out these disabilities before we put it on the market, before we let the Andromeda strain out of the laboratory? Don't you think we should have done everything possible to restrain it, to contain it, to find out what it's going to do before we let it out into the wild or the general population? See, with the salmon thing, nobody knew that there was any difference in the reproduction system of the tame salmon versus the wild salmon. The presumption was, hell, you know, what difference does it make whether you're raising them in a pond or whether you're raising them out in the wild, or they grow in the wild? Never entered anybody's mind. But after they'd been doing it for 20 years, then somebody woke up and said, gee, the tame salmon, they've only got half to a fourth the number of eggs that the wild ones do. What does that translate into? That translates into you don't have enough of them being born every year to absorb all the predators that are eating most of them, and not enough of them survive, so you have lowered populations. Lowered populations make the whole population weaker. The weaker the population becomes, then the fewer you have over time. The fewer you have over time, the weaker it becomes. The weaker it becomes, the fewer you have over time. And then the fewer you have over time, the weaker it becomes, until finally they become extinct. Gee, nobody thought to look into that and to experiment with it and to find out what this is going to mean over 20 years. God, no, we can't wait 20 years to find out. We've got to experiment right now in the wild, in the ecosystem, and then we find out, oh my God, the genie's out of the jar. The wild salmon have now been infected by the tame salmon, and this is what they do when they want to control insects. I'll describe this one for you. They got an insect infestation over here. So what they do is they go out and they sterilize a bunch of males. And then they release these sterile males out into the general population of the moths. So the sterile moths, they go out and they breed with the fertile females, which makes the offspring infertile. Well, now that the offspring are infertile, they can't reproduce. See where we're going with this? And so the population of these moths, or whatever it is you're targeting over here, collapses. So what we did, we took a bunch of infertile salmon and released them into the general population. And over time, the population of the salmon will collapse. Well, hell, we didn't want to do that. And, you know, that wasn't our goal, but that's what happened. Well, that's what we're doing here. We're not experimenting. We're not taking the time, you know, to find out what the consequences of our actions are going to be. And we're really not smart enough to figure that out. We're motivated by profit. We're not motivated by trying to produce a superior salmon, a superior, more nutritious salmon, a superior, more nutritious tomato. What we're trying to do is to produce a tomato that produces more profit. We're money-oriented. And we're doing a great job at that. I mean, you know, we're producing more bins and bushels of foodless food than we've ever produced in history. I can remember when the production of corn was about 30 bushels to the acre, which is about what you get from open pollinated corn like Indian blue corn. And 30 bushels to the acre at $3 a bushel is worth $90 an acre. So along comes, along comes Seed Man, and he says, well, we can get four times that, we can irrigate, and we can use this improved seed over here, this hybridized seed, and we can get 120 bushels to the acre. Well, 120 bushels to the acre times 3 is $360. So do you want to get $90 to the acre or $360 to the acre? It takes one bushel of corn to seed it. So you can spend $22 of Monsanto GM seed corn and get $360, or we can spend $3 and get $90. Would you rather spend $3 and get $90 or $22 and get $360? I mean, you know, come on, you know, do your arithmetic. And the farmer says, well, I want to do $360 an acre rather than $90 an acre. But the farmer isn't doing tests on the corn to find out what the nutritional content is, or what the reproductive rate is, or anything else. He's just interested in the short term. He's interested in this year's crop. The salesman from Monsanto says this is what's going to give it to you. The farmer buys it because that's what the salesman told him. The salesman told him that because that's what the brochure told him from the Monsanto company. And then, of course, these companies, they hide. I mean, if they know that there is a side effect or they know there's a debilitation, then they hide it. Well, that's not honest. It's dishonest. Over the long haul, it's got debilitating effects. It's got a cause and effect relationship, and that's what we're involved in. And that's what Jeffrey Smith is telling us. And I've just scratched the surface. I mean, I'm just, you know, just giving you some of the highlights over here. Now, if you're a guy that says, well, I haven't got time to read this whole book, buy the book and just read the headlines and captions. And it'll tell you the story and the answer. And then if you're a more serious reader and you say, well, I want to know why it works that way, and then here's the science. And here's the sources, and here are the footnotes, and here's where you go to check it out and find out if the guy's lying to you or not. Remember, the book now is called Genetic Roulette by Jeffrey Smith. And so my conclusion is I'm not going to get into GM foods. I'm going to let you people try it first, and I'm going to watch and see the results. And if you go sterile, well, then, by God, that was a good plan on my part. Stay away from it so I don't go sterile. If you come down with some debilitating disease like the L-tryptophan experience, well, then let you hurt. I can watch you hurt and learn from your pain just as easy as I can to hurt and learn from my own pain. In fact, I'd rather learn from your pain than from my pain. I'd rather you hurt real bad than me hurt real bad. I'd rather you die than me die. Now, that's my selfish outlook on life. All right. Now, if you want to get a copy of the book, you go to, remember, our friends down there in Austin, Texas. I say our friends. I don't know if they're my friends or not. They might be jerks down there, but it's called the BraveNewBookstore.com. I don't know that they're jerks. I'm just saying, I don't know. You may call me and say, hey, there were a bunch of jerks down there. Well, they've got the books, don't they? And that's what we're after. It's called Brave New Bookstore, and their telephone number is 512-480-2503. 512-480-2503. I met a couple of them down there. They're pretty good guys. I think you'll like them. And I recommend them because they're out here selling the underground books that other people won't sell. So, and I like to support the guys that support me. Hey, I'm out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there. And remind you again that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information, please go to our website. It's at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.